This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. This is 2 hours of sports talk like none other. Footnotes with the man who speaks his own language.
Me fail English? That's impossible.
Your host, Kevin Foote.
Welcome into Footnotes. Dawson Iserlow live from the EFCO Development Studios as we are having some technical difficulties getting our guy Kevin Foote. He is live over at the Teague and he's getting set to sit down with Matt Deggs. But for now, we're going to try and resolve a couple things and hopefully get you out to Kevin Foote right away. He's got a big time show lined up. It's a special Cajuns edition of Footnotes and it'll be the same way with RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh later on today, as we will have a ton of different guests, Coach Deggs, and I think we now have Kevin Foote.
I can remember sitting in the old beat up press box with the old scoreboard and sitting next to Mr. Moore. It's just, I think about what he would think if he saw this.
Yeah, it's I don't get up here very much, and it is gorgeous from right here. It's the pine trees and just the new turf and just the setting. It does. It pops. It's gorgeous. I should come up here more often.
when the game gets rough, Coach, just come sit by us and you can tell us what's going on.
If I get bounced again, I might come up here.
All right. So part of the cool part about having – this show this week is what a huge week. The Cajun softball team played LSU last night, got a great victory. It was packed full of fans. The Cajuns are playing Southern Miss this weekend. It's alumni weekend. They're going to honor the 2014 team, which you were a part of. And so that's just going to be a ball of fun, and yet you got to play baseball too. So, it's kind of interesting for
first,
you,
right?
I'm think. Yeah.
I mean, the best way we can honor those guys is put a good product on the field. And, we're going to play Houston Christian tonight, and I'd love to see a great crowd out here tonight. We've got almost perfect weather. There's not a lot of humidity in there. It's kind of crisp this morning. It is going to heat up as we go, which is good. We play great in warm weather. And then this weekend is, it's going to be time to get after it. And it ought to be a great series. Like you said, going to honor the 2014 team, which is, one of the bigger reasons why I came back here. And Coach Rove and that 2014 team just meant so much to me and my family and felt like we had unfinished business. That team, I still believe to this day, should have won the national championship and just weren't able to get it done there at the end against Ole Miss. But what a special group of guys. And, I'll never coach another group like that. They were one of a kind, unique, and very, very talented.
Well, I kind of feel like, especially after watching the way he pitched at Coastal last week, if you had LP Langevin, y'all might have won the national championship.
No, that's we were probably one to two guys short on the bump, and I would have really liked to have seen as good as Ott and Berenick were that year, and Plitt and Booty won 10 games, I believe. I'd have liked to seen Dex come back. If Kierstad comes back too, man, that would have been a juggernaut of an offense.
All right, before we get to some more memories from 2014, this I know you got to play a game tonight, but conference is still conference, and I asked you in Monday's presser that the rivalry with Coastal, to me, that is just different than the rivalry with Southern Miss. What about that series this weekend?
Well, the rivalry with Coastal's getting there, and last year here, you know, we get after them on Friday, they get after us on Saturday, and then we got a one-run lead, and Nick Lucky pops one in there and into the wind and runs Marsh out of there, and then Brownie robs a home run in right field from Rock, goes crazy, and then we're able to get after them in the tournament. And then I thought it was a great series this past weekend, so we got a little something brewing there, and, you know, two good teams just getting after it. Southern Miss is more of a natural rival for us. They are very similar to us and just an unbelievably good fan base, just like us. Great ballpark, great setting, great community. We match each other in so many things, and so there's a natural rivalry there. And look, they've gotten the better of us the last several years, but all of those games, for the most part, have been, you know, going back to 21, we weren't near what we are now, but get blown up on Friday. There's a little skirmish breakout, whatever, and then we lose on the international tiebreaker on Saturday, and then lose another extra inning game on Sunday, and then the following year come here you know, we're able to get a game, and then they get us, and then there's a controversial two or three really controversial calls. And then last year, you know, we get after them, they get after us, and both teams could have won the last game. We just weren't able to find a way. And then the championship game of the tournament, which we went to that tournament. We might have set a record. We played six games at a tournament. It's, I mean, that's hard to do.
Yeah, that was
with the
incredible
pitching we had, it's pretty incredible. So, yeah, there's definite rivalry there, and they do a great job, and they get a great program, and I'm looking forward to our fans coming out and us being rowdy and us playing great baseball this weekend.
We talked about what you were going to face in Coastal. Would they score a lot of runs in the ballpark? Well, Southern Miss scores a lot of runs, too. And, I mean, I don't know that they have quite that. I mean, a couple of years ago they had unbelievable starting pitching. I don't know that they have quite that. So how is this? I know the venue's different. That's going to make a difference. But how's the matchup with Southern Miss pitching and hitting, comparing and contrast with Coastal?
Coastal's got a really good lineup, and it's a different dynamic in that ballpark. And it's a small ballpark, very favorable to the hitter. Obviously, you're on the road, but the biggest change and dynamic for us, and I think this is where they'll get teams as well, is the dirt infield, and which you just don't play on a lot. I think our last dirt infield was what, Arkansas State?
Just State, yeah, that's what I was going to say,
and
yeah.
We just have not filled it great on dirt this year, and a lot of the reason is you just don't see it. The hops are different. You don't truly know what you're going to get. You don't run as fast. You don't get to as many balls. There's a lot that goes into that, and they've perfected that. They filled the ball great on that surface, wait for you to make a mistake, and then they'll pop you. And that, unfortunately, that's what happened to us on Friday. And then on the back end of the doubleheader on Saturday, which was the third game, you know, we had a chance to win the series up 10-6. We just, we're walking nine guys. And, you know, it's going to be hard to beat that team in that ballpark walking that many guys. And they do a great job, probably the best job I've seen of any team we've played this year with the strike zone. So I'm not going to say any names, but on Friday night, the guy behind the plate's not calling strikes. Strikes we're used to getting. But they're also not swinging, and
yeah,
that's the key.
Yeah.
And
now, is Southern Miss that patient?
You know, yeah, they're super talented. They're really, really good. And, you know, but once again, two different ballparks. Our ballpark has a tendency to do to people is neutralize you a little bit, and we see it ourselves. You've got to be able to play a different style of game here, meaning you got to be able to put the ball in play. You got to stay low and hard. Anything in the air a lot of days, especially when it gets warm, is going to be an out. And you've got to be able to use a short game and to get you going. So you're not just going to be able to pop balls up and they're gone here. It's a very fair ballpark in the sense that you can get away with a mistake on the mound and you can still run it out of here, but you're going to have to find the barrel.
Are you worried about everything else going around the game being a distraction, or is your team focused? That's not going to matter.
Yeah, I mean, we pretty much got – we're a traveling circus as it is. I
You're used to that.
We got enough stuff going on with us that, you know, you just never know, and, which I like. Every good team has stuff. And, you know, it's I don't see us getting bogged down in anything. That's my job. They just got to go out and play.
You mentioned stuff like I'm sure the 2014 team had a lot of stuff. I mean, there were some characters on that team.
I didn't know if practice or a fight was going to break out. It just depended.
Yeah.
But one thing you could book and take to the bank was when it was go time, they were all together. And they had each other's back. And for that three-hour stint, they were going to go harder than anybody in the country and do whatever it took to win. And like I said, man, to lose the first game of the year and then never lose back-to-back games and wind up with 50 wins, two wins off the all-time record, is a feat that probably won't see again, especially in this day and age.
It's, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people credit Jason. He probably was a big part of it. But there's everybody wants to win. But it just seemed like they wanted to win more than just the normal college athlete did.
It was unbelievable. And they all had their own personality and persona, and they played to it, and it's who they were. You know, Jace is the worst loser still to this day I've ever been around. I mean, it was bad. It was like the kid from Bad News Bears, bad.
Yeah.
Tanner.
Yeah.
Called him.
Tanner Boyle, yeah.
You know, Jace got barred from the mound on pitching visits because he was cussing the pitcher so bad. And, you know, Strentz, Big Cajun, was kind of the enforcer and protection on that team. Everybody could knew that he had their back. And Compey was kind of a silent killer. Didn't say a whole lot, but loved to compete. We always said you can't spell Compton without compete, and or compete without Compy. And then Baby Trahan had his own swagger and humility and was very grounded. And the guy that a lot of people don't realize was really the straw that stirred the drink on that team was Shug Gerard. And there was a lot of voices on that group, but Shug probably, when he spoke, everybody listened. And then you got a guy like Ryan Leonards that was a utility knife and could do anything for you. And then obviously C.A. Caleb Adams, you know, probably the most confident guy in the group, and he'd let you know that. And Butsy, and then Seth Harrison, and, you know, just I could go on and on, but those guys are family to me. And then you got Ott and Baranek and Plitt and Booty and Matty Hicks and just so many cast of characters that, you know, we always said this, we were a bunch of nobodies that collectively came together to become somebody. And we didn't care who got the credit. And Coach was an incredible ringmaster. And I was kind of the drill sergeant, if you will, and we made a good team.
Well, it's going to be fun. I know y'all got together. A couple of the guys told me you kind of brought them. You brought them to your house, maybe before the season, sometime in the off season, and they really enjoyed it. But I'm sure y'all going to really enjoy this weekend as well.
Yeah, I just, you know, I'd give anything, seriously, because there's not a day that goes by I don't just, you know, that. You know, we win 9-2 or whatever it is, and then Leno hits the first pitch of the game right back through the kid. And I'm talking about game two.
Yeah. Just,
that was the game, man. And there's not a day goes by you don't think about it. And you'd give your life for those guys, man. They helped save mine and my family. And they just mean the thing about the team, there was a lot of broken kids and players and coaches on that team, man. And we just – I think we all helped heal each other, and it was miraculous. It was nothing short of miraculous. And so I'd give anything to see him play one more time.
Jace told me it still haunts him to this day, just that they didn't get that one more. You didn't get that one more win.
Yeah.
I think Coach Daggs and Jace are not the only ones for sure. Well, Coach, we appreciate your time as always. Good luck this weekend.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. Right.
We'll be back.
Back to the sports talk you not only want, but need. This is ESPN, 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back to Footnotes. You are listening to 1037 Lafayette, 1041 Lake Charles. We are broadcasting this today's show live from ML Teagmore Field at Russo Park. Beautiful view up here in the press box as they prepare for this weekend's great activity. Southern Miss in town and the kind of reunion of the 2014 team. We have with us not a former baseball player, but one of former Cajun great quarterback, Jake Delhomme. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Excited for the draft, and I'm doing awesome. I know you're just as excited. I know how much you love that.
Well, I love the draft, and I am, you know, it's so weird. I've been saying lately that when you don't have an offensive line, essentially you're homeless. And so to me right now, the Saints are homeless, and they need an offensive tackle in the worst way. But then you have guys like Brock Bowers out there that are so tantalizing. They're kind of tempting. I think I'm going to shed a tear if they don't pick him, and I'm going to shed a tear if they do pick him.
Yeah, Kev, you'd have to think it's offensive line for the Saints. I did a podcast last week with John DeShazer and Aaron Summers with the Saints, just talking draft, you know, Panthers and things like that. And I asked them after, and John was like, Jake, they have to pick offensive linemen. It's got to be two offensive linemen. He was just adamant about that. So, and you'd like to think they have a pretty good bead on it. But I'm like you. Bowers is certainly special. Does he last that long? This draft is so intriguing, man. I kind of think one and two are set in stone. But after that, I really and truly have no clue which direction they'll go.
At 9 and 10, because, you know, if you're going to draft a rookie quarterback in Caleb Williams, so there's two things to do. One, do you give him another weapon, which they already have, you know, got a pretty, you know, and more, you know, they've got two really good wide receivers right now, or do you draft an offensive lineman to support him? Same thing with the Jets. You got Aaron Rodgers, this old guy. Your offensive line has been a shambles. He only played four plays. How can you not draft an offensive tackle, it seems like, to support him?
I agree with you, Kevin. I think, listen, wide receiver is very deep, and I think offensive line is very deep, especially, you know, your first six, seven tackles or guard, those type of areas. So I just believe – so take the Aaron Rodgers situation – yeah, he's 40 years old. He's coming off the injury, Rich. I really and truly don't worry about that injury, to be quite honest. But, you know, the last couple of years in Green Bay, they didn't make the playoffs and things like that. So if he just has 1 year left, it never fails. It never hurts to have enough good offensive linemen. It never fails. Go back to the Mike Ditka days. What did he do? He had Willie Rope. He signed Jerry Fontenot, right, his first year. Who did they draft? Chris Naoli, top 10 in the guard. And then the following year was what? Kyle Turley. So that was kind of the base, so to speak, for when half came in and the Saints were able to win the NFC South in the first playoff game, is that you had that offensive line. So you can never go wrong, especially if you like that offensive lineman, because they can be there for so long.
But here's my concern forever, even during, like you mentioned, the Ditka years, which were not good years in and of themselves and personnel-wise and all, but even then they knew how to identify offensive linemen and defensive linemen, line of scrimmage guys. The last three or four years, you know, Ruiz has been okay, but he hasn't been kind of what you thought. You know, Penning was a bust, and Davenport was a bust, and Peyton Turner. It's like they don't know what – it's like they don't know how to identify defensive and offensive linemen anymore. It's like their motto has to change.
Well, the Davenport deal, that's an injury situation, because this guy, and you saw flashes of it, just physical freak, and the Peyton Turner thing really hasn't, you're correct, worked out just yet. Now, the Penning situation, that just hasn't worked. But I still give Jeff Ireland credit. I just, what he has done draft-wise and where he has found some guys, the guy's really good and he's done a good job. It gets amplified when you don't hit on someone. But listen, you're sitting here upset because 8-8. I mean, we just won two games last year. Try announcing those games. That's not fun. I'm just looking for any help we can get somewhere along the line.
No, I get that. I get that for sure. All right, as far as the quarterbacks, you know, obviously everyone knows Caleb Williams going to the Jets. Most of the national people are higher on Jaden Daniels. Drake May's kind of more of the old school quarterback. And then you have Nix and Penix. So where are you on that, on everyone after Caleb Williams?
Listen, I think Jaden goes to one, and I don't know anything, but Dan Quinn, defensive coordinator, what keeps the defensive coordinator up at night, a running quarterback that you can try to account for him. And Jaden Daniels made SEC defenses look slow. And I understand he played with two first-round pick wide receivers, but the guy was really throwing some beautiful passes. He was layering in some passes. His deep balls are really good. I stay down the field. Super impressed with the kid, to be quite honest. I mean, deserved the Heisman, in my opinion. The May kid, I think he's a really, really good player. I thought he was really good as a sophomore. Long ago, the offensive coordinator left and went to Wisconsin with Luke Fickle. And I think they struggled last year offensively. I didn't think he had a ton of weapons around him and even a ton of weapons in front of him. I think there's a lot there. J.J. McCarthy, Kevin, I'm going to be honest. I think he's the most NFL-ready because of Jim Harbaugh. But it's like I haven't seen enough because they were so good. They were so talented around him, and he only did what he needed to do. So I haven't seen him in person physically, what he looks like. I haven't seen him throw, how the ball comes off his hand. I know he's extremely highly regarded. Then I think there's a break between Bo Nix and Penix. The Nix kind of ran around a little too much for me. I love his competitive nature. I love everything about him. Accuracy, I'm not quite sure. I think Penix has an extremely strong arm. He's accurate. Like, it's almost ironic. It's almost weird. Seems like he's more accurate down the field than he is in the shorter type of passes. And it's difficult for me assessing a left-hander. I know that can be an excuse. It feels like it's a longer release and a longer windup. I'm not overly worried about the injury issues. He's played the last couple of years without it. So, look, Kevin, if we didn't have a rookie wage scale, we would not be taking all these quarterbacks as early as we have been. But since the rookie wage scale went into effect, I think the 2011 season, teams are not afraid to roll the dice and take the quarterback because you really and truly don't get crippled, so to speak, from the salary cap in that regard.
All right. Before we let you go, I want to talk a little bit about the Cajun football. They're going to have the spring game on Saturday, and it's going to be closer to the public because of the renovation. First of all, what is it like for you to drive? I'm sure you drive near the facility here and there and see Cajun Dome kind of in a demolition. I mean, the Cajun field in a demolition stage after, you know, all the times that you've spent there. Like, what has that experience been like for you to watch that slowly?
Well, it certainly is very different when you drive by and you see the upper deck gone. I'm excited for it, Kevin. I think it's a long time coming. And looking at the renderings and just how it's going to be placed and some of the new amenities and the features, and you're going to be closer to the field. I like it. I'm excited. I'm excited that it's going to get a big facelift, and I'm looking forward to it. You know, the last couple of years were a little difficult. I think the initial year after Napier left and we lost all those draft picks and the seven guys to the transfer portal. Last year we were close on a couple of games. Could have gone either way for us. Three in particular stand out to me where easily could have gone our way, but that happens when you have to play three quarterbacks. So I'm looking forward to some stability this year. And like to see this team get back to about eight wins or a little more and see where we can go. I know the coaching staff, I know they've always, you kind of looked toward this year because there was you kind of had to reset. And it's difficult, Kevin. I've talked to many coaches, be it Power Five and be it Group of Five, and they're all miserable, to be very honest. They're absolutely miserable with the way the college football world has gone. You're not just only recruiting your guys I know for a fact of an SEC team that had a spring game the other day, and they did not have a spring game. It was more of like a skills competition, and they will not release a depth chart until after the portal closes. I mean, that's how ridiculous it is because they're so worried about kids leaving and depth and things of that nature.
Yeah, it's just awful. But I think of the one of the interesting things that we don't think is the quarterback. Now, you were different because you started, you know, like the second half of your freshman year. But I think when I see Chandler Fields' situation, and you think of these quarterbacks all, you know, all over the years at all levels where you sit your first 2 years and you might play a year or two, and it kind of just when you start to figure this football thing out as a quarterback and a leader. Well, if you have NFL talent, you go over to the NFL. But a lot of guys that don't have NFL talent, just when they start to figure it out, their career's over in college. Well, Chandler is getting this extra year because of COVID and injuries and all kind of stuff that he can really capitalize because he's probably kind of figured it out as a veteran. And and you saw some signs of that late last year, and hopefully he can transfer that into really having a good year next year.
I hope so. I think we all hope so. And listen, Ben will be back also. And Ben played some decent football and unfortunately got hurt. And that's the way that this game goes. Injuries are – but you'd love for Chandler, being a veteran guy the way he is, to be able to play really good football for us this year and kind of limit turnovers and get the points up on the board. I mean, that's what it's about. You got to get your team into the end zone. And we were close on a few games last year where – I can remember the Georgia State. We had the right call. We just had an unfortunate. We threw the ball low. Zion did, and it's not a. It just happens. And then Ben in the I think the Old Dominion game. We had somebody in the front of the end zone, and it was off. And I've been that guy. I've missed those throws. But then they have those years where you're on. And so you go back to the bowl game. We had an opportunity there to close it out. And they made a play on fourth down. Love to see us back on the winning track and see where we can go. But college football, man, it's certainly it's a moving target, to say the least.
Oh, no, it is some. All right, we're one day away. I like I said, I don't mind being bored tomorrow. I just don't want to be crushed and defeated. So we won't know how good these guys are going to be, but I'm worried.
I agree with you. And think about it. Here I am, a lonely Panther fan with two wins last year, and we don't even have a pick in the first round. So I get to really enjoy the first round, just kind of criticizing everyone else because there's no nervousness on my part. We don't even have
a
pick.
Well, I get it. Well, look, we appreciate your time as always, sir. Enjoy the draft.
Take care, Kev.
Thanks. Jake DeLome will take a timeout. We'll be back.
Go sign up for our Rewards Club at ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com so you can score tickets, gift certificates, and much more. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back to Footnotes. We are at ML Teague Moore Field at Russo Park. We started out the hour with UL baseball coach Matt Deggs, and then got a chance to speak with Jake DeLome. When you listen to Jake talk, you can just tell he just loves football and NFL football and the draft. And he would be fun. I've never watched a draft with him, but he would be fun because he has so many opinions on so many different things. Always enjoy catching up with Jake. Before we move too much further, what is our poll question of the day, sir?
Yes, sir, Mr. Kevin. So the poll question of the day is, which Raging Cajun Diamond team do you think will host an NCAA regional? So you have just softball, just baseball, both, or neither? Just softball is leading the way at 47.4% of the votes. Just baseball at 5.3%, both at 31.6% of the vote, and neither at 15.8% of the vote.
Well, I think everybody feels a whole lot better about softball's chances after last night's 9-4 win. You know, I'm a person that I've become pretty numb to the whole fans discussion and how many showed up and how many are going to show up and how many are here. And I just gave up on all that. But, I heard sellout a day or two before last night's game, or Monday, I should say. And then you get there and it really was sold out. Like, it was standing room only in the out. It's been a while since every seat seem totally full in the outfield. I mean, I've seen it pretty packed in the grandstand, but not in the outfield. It's been a while, and it was a great atmosphere. The Cajuns played tremendous. And, yeah, a lot of people feel a lot better about their chances of hosting. And Coach Glasgow just kind of feels like if they do what they're supposed to do the rest of the way, they will host.
Yeah, yeah, now, absolutely.
Now, you know, when we get a little closer, we'll talk about if it's the best thing. We have that discussion every year, especially with softball. Not so much with baseball, but certainly with softball. Is it the best thing? We'll see who they match them up with and all of that. But, yeah, it's it's going to make it fun for May for sure. And there's still a lot of games left to play. The cool thing about the softball team is the rest of the schedule. You know, they're going to be in Monroe this week, but they're not going to leave the state of Louisiana for the rest of the regular season until they go back to San Marcos for the conference tournament. So the travel will be a little better. With all of that said, I got to tell you, I'm not a big fan of tonight's game. And in about an hour, we'll be talking with UL softball coach, our weekly 10:35 Wednesday visit. We'll just be doing it in person up here at Teague Moore Field here in the press box. But with Jerry Glasgow, you know, last night was a big emotional win. It was like a big celebration after, a lot of people there, autographs, and then now you got to go an hour up the road and play a McNeese team that can beat you. I mean, they're really good defensively. They pitch well. The Cajuns have kind of had their number over the last few years, to be honest. But it just seems like it's got the potential to be a trap game here. So we'll see how that game goes. By the way, the most updated thing that I've seen is the Cajuns are 15 in RPI. I've heard a lot of people say they moved up one, but yesterday, prior to the game, when I looked at it, they were at 15. So I don't. I guess it depends what exactly you're looking at. But by all accounts, they're at 15 right now, and we'll see how that moves up if they can continue to win the rest of their games. Like on paper, they should. But again, really tricky game today in Lake Charles against McNeese, who's also been playing very well. And can really pitch and defend, so we'll see how that goes. All right, let's do this. The boss is here, and so let's go ahead and we'll take a timeout and come back and get a little chat in with UL Athletic Director Dr. Brian Maggard after this timeout. Stay tuned.
Helping you get through your workday. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back to Footnotes. You are listening to 1037 Lafayette, 1041 Lake Charles. We are in the press box at ML Teague Moore Field at Russo Park, awaiting a great weekend where the Cajuns will play Southern Miss. And if you think there was some intensity last weekend in Coastal, and there was, Coach Deggs hasn't really bit the bait I've given him, but it's a different kind of rivalry with Southern Miss, and there's been some history in recent years, and so it's going to be lots of fun. Plus, it's alumni weekend. The 2014 team will be honored on Saturday, and a lot of people are looking forward to that. We have with us Cajun Athletic Director Dr. Brian Maggard, who I know, I didn't get to talk to him last night, but I saw him. What fun it was at Lamson Park last night.
Yeah, no kidding, Kevin. It was a tremendous environment, a sellout. You know, the team played magnificently. The weather was beautiful. You know, you just couldn't have scripted it any better. And very happy for Coach Glasgow and the staff and team. And, what a great way to start off a competitive week.
Absolutely. We were joking off the air. The only thing that could have made it any better is if Maya Davis would have caught the two-run homer that Carly Petty hit, because I thought she did.
I
think a lot of people thought she did. And she said after the game that she thought she was going to catch it, but it just tipped off the glove and hit a chain back there. But no, other than that, it couldn't have been any more
perfect.
No,
that's right. And Maya had a tremendous game, right? She started, you know, the bottom of the first off with a triple and
Got a two-run single later in the first.
Yeah. And, you know, made some great catches in the outfield. But no, it's just a magnificent night. Really, really appreciative of our fan base for showing up and supporting the team like they did.
You know, the softball team is just another example of perseverance and not overreact. They were 9-12 and looking terrible. Yeah. I know you don't go to every game, but you go to a lot of games.
Oh, yeah.
And early on, it was not aesthetically pleasing.
It really was, it was not. And I tell you, you know, and I know Coach felt the same way. I felt the same way. And we're just kind of like scratching our heads, like, wait a minute, because this is a good team.
Yeah.
It was a good team. And, you know, who knows? But certain things have to happen sometimes for teams to gel and to come of age. And this one certainly has done that.
And, you know, again, 9-12 to where they are now. I mean, we were thinking. People were talking, well, are they going to even, you know, if they don't win the Sun Belt Conference tournament, they're even going to get in. And I didn't really entertain that thought. But now you're talking about hosting a regional from 9-12. That is a huge step.
It is. And credit to all everybody involved with that program. And, you know, as we're telling people, last night's win at least keeps us in the conversation of hosting. We're still by no means, you know, a confirmed host for postseason play, but we're still in the conversation with that win.
Absolutely. All right. Obviously, the baseball, you weren't around here in 2014, but I'm sure you've heard a lot of the stories and, you know, just how crazy it was. And you had fans packed in the stadium and you had fans outside watching it on a big screen in the park. It was just fun.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure you're looking forward. I'm sure you probably met many of them already, but it's going to be a fun weekend baseball-wise, too.
It really will. It's going to start Friday night. You know, we're really going to be pushing for a sellout here Friday night like we did last night at Lampson. You know, it's going to be electrifying to your point. You know, that competitive nature between Southern Miss and us is just it's a neat, neat thing. And but, yeah, then you take on Saturday where you're honoring the 2014 team. They'll have the crawfish boil. You know, I'll get to interact with a lot of them out there. And you know, you got a great, obviously a great day Saturday. And then Sunday, you know, Governor Jeff Landry's going to throw out the first pitch. So that'll be another big deal. So all in all, it'll be a huge series for us. For us, both competitively and then just with the events surrounding it.
Absolutely. Get what it's, I know it's probably almost, you know, we kind of get used to things. This construction of Cajun Field, you've probably got what is an update on all that?
Yeah, well, first of all, that project is moving along at a great clip, way on time, if not a little bit ahead of time. Mother Nature's cooperating nicely. Our general contractor, J.B. Mouton, is doing a superb job. I mean, they really are. They're knocking it out of the park. But, yeah, we're busy. You know, obviously, they're busy with that. You know, I'm not that involved with construction.
Right.
You wouldn't want me to be. But but we are, you know, we're knee-deep into planning for the 24 season. Everything from ticket renewals to priority seating, which will probably start mid-May and, you know, go through – get into June a little bit, then we'll open up season ticket sales to the general public sometime in June or July. But we're also getting that stadium as ready as we can, you know, for that for the season, knowing that we're only going to be sitting on the east side in the south end zone. So we're coming up with some premium concepts and some opportunities for people to have a little bit different experience than just sitting, you know, in the stands. But our external team, RCAF, everybody's working very hard on that behind the scenes.
So has anything changed since the original announcement about the new stadium and all the press conferences in terms of how next season's going to be and what it's going to look like on this side or that side? Or is any?
No, not really. I mean, we know, and we've always announced this, that all the seating will occur in either the east lower bowl or the south end zone. Right, so and all the way around that, you know, we'll see if we can have any access to the hill for some general admission seating. We might be able to do that.
Yeah,
but for the most part, everything we stated, you know, going back to the announcement, is the same.
All right, the other sport that's been in the news obviously lately is basketball because of all the transfer portal stuff. Mm-hmm. First of all, I know you're really involved in our. And are an administrator, but you're also a fan. I mean, you can, you don't have to be, you know, you, we've seen you at games. We know you're a fan. So if you look around the conference, I think it's, I understand fans get mad about this and that, and it's all part of supporting a program. But if you look at around the Sun Belt Conference, the Cajuns have fewer overall transfer portal losses than anyone in the conference.
That's right.
And when you look at football and baseball and softball and basketball, have they had bad losses? Of course. I mean, no one wanted Zion Chris to leave. But overall, the Cajuns have been better off than every school. I'm not talking almost every school overall. And yet it still hurts to see players that you – athletes that you – for some of them, like Kobe Jr. has been here for 6 years. It's like, you know, it's tough to watch.
It is. But you know what? All of us have to learn and recognize is we are in a new era of college athletics. And as recent as yesterday, you know, it was confirmed that the one-time transfer rule is going away, right? Now there's multi-year transfers. And so on any given year, a student-athlete can transfer and be immediately eligible. It's not just one time anymore. And what we're going to see moving forward, and myself and you, Kevin, and others, you're just going to have to get used to, there's always going to be some change in rosters. There's just going to be. And, you know, people can sit there and be concerned about, you know, this student's leaving for money or that, and that's possible. It's very possible that they are. But they're also, like in the case of Kobe Julian, he and I had this conversation directly. He was just ready for a change. To your point, he's been here 6 years.
Cheers.
He's played. He's helped us win a championship. He's got his undergraduate degree. He started his master's, and he has one more year of eligibility, and he just wanted to try something different. That's going to be his prerogative, and that's going to be every student-athlete's prerogative moving forward. They don't have to be a six-year student-athlete. They can be a two-year student-athlete. And for whatever reason, they just want to do something different. In some cases, it could be getting, you know, some good NIL opportunities.
Yeah.
In some cases, it could be the thought that they have to play on a bigger platform or a different platform, you know, to get noticed, to get where they want to be from a professional sports opportunity. In other cases, they're going to have certain voices in their ears that's going to be influencing them one way or the other. And then I think there's always going to be this this innate enjoyment, this innate passion for the re-recruitment process.
To yes.
feel like you're wanted, right?
Yes.
And not that our coaches don't make our student athletes feel wanted, but look, I've had schools reach out to me or, you know, mention to me about being their athletics director. It feels good. It makes you feel good.
Yeah.
But and our student athletes are no different. And so we, as a fan base, we have to embrace the fact that the landscape is absolutely changed. Just because a student athlete leaves, it doesn't mean that, you know, it's a coaching problem, that it's a student athlete problem, that it's a departmental problem or a university problem. To your point, Kevin, we have lost fewer students than any other school in the Sun Belt, and it's not anything disastrous. Look at App State. Basketball. They were the regular season champions. They lost 8 or 9 guys to the portal.
And the conference tournament champion, yeah. James Madison, lost like 5 or 6.
Right,
they lost.
Right.
Both
right.
lost more than the Kings.
And they had a head coaching change. You kind of understand that.
Yeah.
Right? But when you have continuity in head coaching, the App State example shows you that you can win a championship, keep your head coach, and still lose most of your roster. And it's not because Dustin Kearns should be fired.
Right.
I mean, Coach Marlin is just, you know, a year out of winning a championship. And so, you know, we just all have to kind of settle down a little bit and be less apt to insert, you know, an opinion that may not be as factual as you think it is. But at the end of the day, it is the new landscape of college athletics. We need to embrace it. We do need to find opportunities to increase NIL
yes.
opportunities for our student athletes. And that translates to money. And so that's just where we're at today. And we'll get it figured out, but you hit the nail on the head. We've had fewer kids leave.
I just don't think a lot of people realize you just see the bad and that's it.
It's easy to get caught up in the moment. I get that. And when you just focus on the micro side of things in a particular instance, it's very easy to think that the sky's falling and that all of a sudden we've got this epidemic.
Massive problem. Exactly. Well, we're out of time. I appreciate it always. Thank you very much.
Appreciate you, Kevin. Thank you. Go Cajuns.
This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. This is 2 hours of sports talk like none other. Footnotes with the man who speaks his own language.
Me feel English? That's impossible.
Your host, Kevin Foote.
Welcome back to Footnotes. You are listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles. If you haven't heard, we are out. ML Teague Moore Field at Russo Park in the press box overlooking beautiful field. And as you know, we kind of look back on last night, great night at Lamson Park for the Cajuns. The softball team, we talked about it when they, a little over a week ago, they were going into a three-game series at Texas State and back-to-back weeks playing LSU. And in those five games, you kind of wanted to be at least 3-2. Obviously, you know, if you could have been 5-0 or 4-1, that would be tremendous. But the goal was kind of to be at least 3-2 against in those five games against teams in the top 20 at the time in RPI, and LSU was at 3 starting the week, and Cajuns won 2 out of 3 against Texas State and lost in Baton Rouge, and last night won 9-4 against LSU. And in about a half hour, Coach Glasgow will be in, and we can talk in more detail. I thought the big thing about last night was they just pitched. Well, obviously they hit, you know, great, but they also pitched better, and it seemed like there was a lot of outside pitching in the game in Baton Rouge, and they came in a whole lot more, and you saw a little pop-up. Like, you don't even see that. We saw it at least 2 times, if not 3 times, I think, where the pitcher caught pop-ups that were weakly hit because they were coming inside so well. What impressed you the most about the win last night?
Yeah, I think the first inning was massive, and the ability for them not to let the first inning kind of go awry there, because, look, for a while there, it pretty much looked like you were going to get out of it still 2-2.
Right.
The bases loaded, nobody out, it's 2-2, and, you know, LSU tries to make some changes, and you get a first pitch ground out to short with the out at the plate, and then you get a pop-up, and now you got 2 outs, and the base is still loaded, and you might leave this inning tied. And I thought that was going to be, you know, potentially their detriment. You get a weird batter there where there's a couple pitches that you should have walked earlier in the count. Either way, you end up finding a way to walk, and then you walk again, and now it's 4-2. And then a big blow was Maya Davis's two-run single.
Yes.
So to get it to 6-2 after the first, you kind of put that, more so not just from the Cajuns' perspective, but I think you gave LSU that, oh, man.
When you almost get out of the inning, too, I almost think
it makes it worse from LSU's perspective. Like, they felt like they were about to get out of it and kind of dodge a bullet, and then you're able to put 4 runs on them. So that was massive. And here's the other good thing about what they did. You know, and I thought going into the game when they didn't start Kelly Lynch. Now, I know Berzon's actually really been their ace more than Lynch, even though Lynch is the Washington transfer that, you know, going into the
lately has been pitching really well.
Yeah, and when they didn't throw her, I thought to myself, maybe Beth Tarina's trying to hold something back here. Like, maybe this is one of those deals where, you know, Beth Tarina is trying to save something for a potential regional, because there's just, you know, there's a good chance you run into this team again, that maybe she's trying to hold something back here. But then she ends up going to her early because, you know, it just wasn't working. But either way, you've now had success against every pitcher they have outside of Berzon. And you did score 2 in the first, and you had chances in that game. So, you know, it's different this year because the goal is obviously to be to host and not see them again. But I just think it's interesting, like, between Coach Glasgow and Coach Tarina, there's always got to be a chess match, because you know there's always a good chance you're seeing them again, the way it's been the past, you know, 5 years where you've been in the regionals with them, what, 3 times. So that first inning was massive.
Have they, and this is for really about about a month down the road, but have they ever, not a month, but 3 weeks, I don't think they've ever both hosted before.
You'd have to go back. There may have been one instance, but no, it's not been common. For whatever reason, the years that the Cajuns have gone up and been that good, LSU wasn't. So, that would be interesting. And again, based on where they are, there's not a whole lot of chance that they end up lining up with each other in supers either, which we know the committee likes to do things like that. You know, if there was a chance to put, you know, LSU at 4 and UL at 13, they'd like to. But I think LSU is going to be between 7 and 10. And I think then the Cajuns will obviously be between 14 and 16 if they are both to host. So there's no real way to line that up outside of, you know, the Cajuns jumping up a few spots and LSU also. But I don't think LSU's got to, you know, right at 500 in SEC play. If they don't win a couple games down the stretch, I think they're going to be in danger of being more of a 9 or a 10 than a 5 or a 6.
Again, we'll be talking with Coach Glasgow in about a half hour. So what is your take on our poll question of the day?
Yeah, I think it's just softball. You know, and we were just talking, you know, outside the room about baseball, where they are.
we've done a lot of talking about how much the RPI does or doesn't matter, so I guess it's kind of funny that we get back to circle to this point, but I just don't see them getting up into the low 20s, which, look, if they're 22-23 in the RPI and they have a regular season Sun Belt title and they have a decent showing in the Sun Belt tournament and they have 40-something wins and they have wins, you know, against Coastal and Southern Miss and all these teams, I think the committee would have no problem having them host despite having an RPI in the 20s. But if their RPI is 30, 32, 34,
yeah,
I don't think you're taking that much of a leap. Now, also had a conversation. Would they, a lot of the projections have them going to A&M. I don't see the committee sending them as potentially the best two seed all the way to the best number one overall seed. Sometimes, though, it depends on the year. Sometimes committees don't seem to care about stuff like that,
yeah.
I guess. But I think they've put themselves in a good enough spot where I'm not sure that's the biggest issue. But I think just softball at this point. But I think, like, last night was massive, and I think it put, when you look at the resume, it's not the same as even last year when the RPI was 11th. They're going to have 12 quad one wins, and that's going to be just about as much as anybody in their area. They arguably have a better resume than Florida State, who's one spot ahead of them in the RPI. Like, they did, Florida State did not play the schedule you all played. So I think they should be hosting as long as they don't stub their toe here down the stretch.
And again, in about 3 weeks, we'll argue whether it's the best thing to be hosting or not. We have that discussion with softball every year. All right. Again, we are out at Teague Moore Field. Baseball this weekend against Southern Miss. And it's important because last weekend, again, the goal, the first goal for me anyway, don't get swept on the road against a really good team. It worked out because Southern Miss got beat on Sunday. So even though the Cajuns lost their first series of the Sun Belt Conference season, they only lost one game. They're five games up. They were five games up. Now they're four games up, but you're still four games up instead of just being three games up. And so it's about right now still winning, bouncing back from that one, and two, that continuing that early season thought that we had, make hay at home and don't get swept on the road, especially when you have a five and now a four-game cushion. That should be a winning formula.
Yeah, and by the way, another result that kind of went under the radar for me, even though we talked a lot before the game about the stretch that Louisiana Tech was about to have, right, where they play Arizona and Dallas Baptist. Well, they got swept by Arizona, but they took two or three from Dallas Baptist. So Louisiana Tech all of a sudden is a top 60 RPI team. And again, they need a couple more quad one wins. That might be one now. As a matter of fact, as of today, it is one because they're in the top 60, and it was a road game. You beat them on the road, which I said earlier, it's actually probably better to beat them on the road than to beat them here if you had to split the series,
right,
because of the way you value, you know, those quad one games and all that. But Southern Miss, you know, it's tough to figure out. Today, the teams are next to each other, 45th and 46th in the RPI. Southern Miss went up four slots after last night. They got themselves a win over at Turchin Stadium against Tulane. So, another road win for them. They've been tough to figure out, though. Hasn't felt like a vintage Southern Miss team. Fortunately, Danny Lynch can't hurt us anymore. so, you know, look, there'll be that. That'll be said about Taylor Pleasance next year, I guess, as well. And Beth,
wait, is she really going?
Well, I think, right? I don't know. Beth Tharina joked with us on the show last week. She said, I know Cajun fans probably just can't wait for Taylor Pleasance to graduate. So she made it sound like she was, but maybe I'll have to check that. Maybe she does have another year. I don't know.
She is so good defensively.
Yeah, no, and I saw a couple plays too last night. You don't see him, but the quick release and the arm strength. She's like a baseball shortstop playing softball. You know what I mean?
You know, we use the word vacuum. She really is like a vacuum.
Yeah, no, and it's
with a quick release.
And they had a couple. LSU defensively overall, like, they just had a couple plays too. There was a ball back to the pitcher where it's Maya Davis, and I thought to myself, too, most pitchers who grab this ground ball right now are going to feel the pressure of Maya's speed, and they're going to try and throw a ball 100 miles an hour, and they're going to throw the ball down, away, they're going to rush it, it's not going to be a good throw. She fielded it and just so calmly, effortlessly just fired it over to first and got Davis by a half step. It was that play where Davis is actually trying to hit it to the pitcher.
Yeah.
Check swing tapper, that's kind of a design play for her. So they're so good defensively, which is why, again, like, they walked you a lot, and then you got a couple big clutch hits. And then the homers late were really nice. I thought that was a real – because they've done that a lot, right, where you score 4 or 5 in the first, and you go, all right, we're cruising, and then you don't ever score again, and all of a sudden, and that, even in the LSU regional, it's happened a couple times. Like, they've gone up early, and
yes,
then they coast. couple more runs late, I thought that was a nice sign of like, okay, let's remember here, we can still score even though we have the lead. Like, it's allowed.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. All right. We've been talking a lot about the Cages because we are here. But last night, nationally, we talked earlier this week about the NBA playoffs and how are the road teams ever going to win, and it finally happened last night.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, it's still some series to me where I look at what's happening. Minnesota, by the way, like Phoenix just –
Minnesota's
still,
good.
They are. No, they are. I still wonder – if there's a point in this series where Booker or Durant takes over a game, and if you get one or two like that and then you win a couple close ones, even though it's 2-0, I'm not done with that series, but I am thinking, you know, Minnesota obviously looks pretty comfortable right now. But you did talk about, yeah, Indiana doing what they did. And that was one where, again, like there was this rush for everybody after game one of these series that was like, okay, well, we don't have to worry about this series anymore. Milwaukee's moving on. Well, like, okay, not anymore. It's 1-1. Yeah. And the same thing with Dallas in the nightcap, which that's the other one too. When you win a game the way Dallas won last night, and you know we've talked about the matchup, that felt like maybe the most evenly matched first round series of anybody because of how good Dallas was late, but how good the Clippers were early. Luka still didn't have his best game. Kyrie either. 11-26 for Luka, 8-18. Like when they win a game and they're not efficient like that, and Dallas is not known as being a defensive team, right? They got a bunch of guys whose knock is that they don't like to play defense. They win a game like that. Kind of steal one. It's basically they had the game that the Pelicans had against the Thunder in game one, except they won it. So that's big for Dallas.
So what time do the Pelicans play?
8:30. It's another late
again?
Tip. Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's going to be a late night, but yes. 8:30.
They really need to win that game.
I mean, yeah, they really, really do.
Need to win that game.
Then they'll have – it'll be interesting, too. They'll have a 2:30 tip on Saturday at the Smoothie King Center back at home because, obviously, on the weekends, the NBA spreads these things out.
Yes.
And then they'll have another – it's pending, but Monday they'll either play at 7:30 or 8:30, but that's going to depend on, obviously, if some of the other series have already wrapped up or not. So, yeah, but this game tonight is massive. And we're going to get to talk to Antonio Daniels tomorrow on RP3 D'Lo and Mesh. Who's the color commentator for the TV broadcast. By the way, and I mentioned it already, another thing that Major League Baseball doesn't do right, there's plenty, but not letting hometown broadcasts broadcast playoff games on side of the national broadcasts I think is a mistake, and I love that the NBA lets the hometown and I brought it up, and I'm going to ask Antonio Daniels the same thing, but it's like watching an entire season of your favorite television show, and then for the finale, they're like, "Yeah, we changed like half the cast just for the finale."
Yeah,
like, I've been watching this. I've been going through this whole season with these broadcasters.
Yes,
and now that the games matter the most, they don't get to do the games. But anyway, that's an aside.
No, and look, even in they don't get to do the national games in the regular season
right.
Either.
Yeah,
like the Astros, the first 2 weeks of the season, like they were on national TV or Apple or whatever four times. Like they had like four or five of their first 10 games that the Astro announcers didn't do.
And for the NBA, it's weird too. Some of the regular season national games, they still do have a hometown. Some of them they don't. I guess that's just negotiated into the contract. But yeah, either way, it's I've always found that weird. Like you listen to Jeff Blum talk Callis all year long, and then when the games matter the most. You got guys, and look, Joe Davis, those guys do a great job. I'm not saying they don't, but it's like sometimes you want to hear the hometown perspective.
Yeah,
it's
just not the same. All right, we'll take a timeout and be back.
Go check out our YouTube channel at ESPN_SWLA for the latest episodes of Miguez Mindset, Over Par, and so much more. That's ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station on YouTube.
Welcome back. Two footnotes. You're listening to ESPN 103.7 Live at 104.1 Lake Charles. Again, we are out at MLT Moore Field at Russo Park and talking a lot of Cajun. Did talk a little bit of NBA in the last segment. We'll see what the Pels can do tonight. And I didn't get to see much of the Clippers and the Mavs, I did see a little bit of it, and didn't see any of the Pacers who just crushed the Bucks. And by the way, for those who may not have heard the backstory, Brooke Ellestad, who's the shortstop of the Cajuns, she came in as a shortstop. She is currently the third baseman, I should say, of the Cajuns. her brothers and her brothers, she's from Wisconsin, and Halliburton played for the Pacers, is from there, and so she kind of grew up near him, and very, very close. The family was very close to Tyrese, so that is kind of cool to have that connection. Also, and I was told after, and this has happened before, Alexa Langeliers last night hit a home run in, well, I think that was the fourth inning, and before Elistad did, hit a home run, and that was great to see. And almost at the same time, I was told her brother Shea, who's the catcher for the Oakland A's, hit a home run. And that's happened before, where it seemed like they both hit home runs at almost the exact same time. That's kind of a cool deal. The A's beat the Yankees 2 days ago, but the Yankees held on to win a close game over the A's yesterday. And, of course, the Astros lose again. It is getting to be an epidemic. And yesterday in the first inning, the Astros gave up 5 runs, and it's something that happens when you are struggling as a team, and the Astros are struggling mightily. It's 2 outs. There's 2 runners on. You're down 2-0, but that's doable. You have a guy steps to the plate, doesn't have a home run yet this year, but he's a little bit of a power hitter, and so I'm like, I don't like this. I don't like this. First pitch was a strike. Ump called it a ball. Second pitch was a strike. The ump called it a ball. And then so you feel like you have to groove one, even though you probably don't, because the bases aren't loaded. There's only 2 on. He grooves it, and he hits a 3-run homer, and now it's 5-0. Now, J.P. Franz didn't give up another run the rest of his outing, but at 2-0, very good chance the Astros still might win. 5-0, they could have still won, but, boy, it makes it a lot tougher. And so that's kind of what happens when you stink and you're struggling and nothing seems to be going your way. They will play again tonight. And speaking of the Cajuns, Spencer Arrighetti will be making another start, because in addition to, not having Framber back, Verlander just got back, and all the other pitchers who are still out, Javier suddenly has some sort of neck issue, and so he's out now as well. And so Arrighetti, who I didn't know that we'd see again for a while, was back up, and we'll see how he pitches tonight. And, I mean, it's cool for Spencer, playing a candidate. I've always kind of liked the Royals Park, but not nearly as famous as he's going to get to pitch at Wrigley Field tonight. So, that's like pitching at Fenway, Wrigley Field. There's just a few parks like that around the league, and I mean, it's as historic as it gets. So that's going to be a cool experience. Of course, I'm not really worried about Spencer's experience today, because when the Astros are struggling as bad, I just want a W. His second outing was much better than his first outing, so we'll see what happens. Hopefully, he can pitch well. They need it. Man, do they need it mightily. So, I talked a little bit of NFL draft with Jake, and you could tell, even though he's obviously tied in with Darnold as a former quarterback and broadcaster, and a little disappointed, obviously, with the way things are going. Plus, from around draft time right now, disappointed that they don't have one. It's not fun if you don't have one. The draft, or not as fun. Of course, Jake is a guy who likes to analyze things, whether it has something to do with where his heart is or not. And so he's going to enjoy it anyway, but you don't enjoy it nearly as much when you don't have a dog in the fight. Like FedEx Man and the rest of the Rams fans, like they probably forgot about the NFL draft the last 5 years, but they're back in it. The Rams picked 19th, and, on paper, they need to get one of these defensive tackles, probably, because they just lost a future Hall of Fame, all-time great defensive tackle. But who knows? A lot of people are suggesting if they don't go that edge rusher or they don't go that defensive tackle, that they might pick one of the quarterbacks, because Stafford is still their starting quarterback, but he's a little on the older side. And so we'll see how that plays out. Again, just really against tomorrow. Look, we've been talking on and off about this for months, and it's finally going to happen tomorrow. And you know, it to me, it's so much is obviously how it's going to impact the Saints will depend on if they trade up and who trades up and how that resets the top 10 or 12 picks. And that's going to be very interesting to see. If you listen to the national media, and again, you listen and you hear what they say, but you always have to wonder, yeah, they're saying that because someone's telling them to say that. And why do they want them to say that? Because the recent thing is, seems like everyone or most people have pretty much convinced themselves Jaden Daniels is going to go to Washington. Makes total sense. Very believable. But also that the Patriots are going to take Drake May. You know, there are more people that saying, should they really do that because they don't have a great roster to support a rookie quarterback? But if you think he's going to be good, I think you have to take him even if you don't have a great roster when you're that high up. Now, if you are at, well, 12 is still kind of high, but if you were at like 15, 16, 17, 18, I don't think you should necessarily feel like you're obligated to pick a quarterback if you don't have the roster to support him. But if you're going to go through the misery that it takes to draft to draft in the top two or three or four, and there's a quarterback that you think could be your quarterback 8-10 years from now, then you got to just do it and not worry about whether you can support him. But And I think that's what makes the Broncos situation so interesting, because they need a quarterback, no question. But if the top four quarterbacks are gone, are you really going to stake your future or your franchise on the fifth or sixth best quarterback if you're not totally sold that that quarterback is going to be, you know, a 10, 12 multi-year starter and go to Pro Bowls, you know, annually and all of that? I mean, look, I get the Vikings trying that, but understand that the Broncos have been bad. They haven't had a winning season in a long time. It's been like 9 years. And if they go for a quarterback and miss again on a quarterback, it could be another 9 years. It is, and you know I'm not a QW at all, but you just, they cannot afford to pick a quarterback and miss. Because, look, the Broncos have need a wide receiver. They have need an offensive lineman. Still, their offensive line has mostly been a disaster show the last 9 years. It's the biggest reason why they've had 9 losing seasons. Everybody thinks it's just a quarterback. Their offensive line has been miserable. It got a little better at times last year, but still didn't run the ball the way that 2 years ago they did a good job of run blocking. But they need pass rushers, and there's a couple of them in the draft. So I have no idea what the Broncos are going to do at 12 if they stay there. Again, the hunch that I have is that they're going to, whatever pick they make there, they're going to try to trade back into the first round and get the quarterback and kind of kill two birds with one stone. But again, I don't know. We'll see if they have the draft capital for that. And again, it's still Sears Catalog guy running the show there. And, you know, they probably should trade back, but that's not in his DNA to trade back. That's just not who he is. He's never been that. You know, I heard Matt yesterday talking how he said it's 0% chance that the Saints are going to use all fifth-round picks, all the four fifth-round picks they have. They're going to trade up into the third round probably, and or at least the fourth round, and I agree with him. And that's just kind of what their DNA is, what they've always done. And so we'll see that, you know, Mickey Loomis did have a press conference yesterday. I don't know that he revealed anything, but he did kind of reveal a few things. And one of them is that's day one is going to be on the team this year, Marshon Lattimore. And so, you know, we talked about 3 weeks ago, if they throw a curveball at us, what could one of those curveballs be? And Quinyon Mitchell was one of the five that we said there. But that's only if this Lattimore rumors were true, and I didn't really believe him at the time, and he's pretty much said that that's not the case. So I don't think you have to worry about the Saints throwing us a curveball, cornerback curveball here. But the other thing that he said was the number eight, and he mentioned, I don't think we trade up beyond eight, and we'll see. You know, eight is the Falcons. Falcons ain't trading with the Saints. But in that range anyway. So we'll see how that goes. But again, right now, the biggest thing is, are they going to trade, and what are the Bears going to do, and what are the Jets going to do? And then what's going to happen if the team trading up is the Bears or the Jets? Oh, man, I can't wait. It's only one more day of waiting. All right, let's take a timeout. We'll be back on the other side with UL softball coach Jerry Glasgow. Stay tuned.
The biggest headlines in the world of sports are discussed here. ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back. You are listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette, 1041 Lake Charles. We have with us UL softball coach Jerry Glasgow. Well, coach, this view is more fun than just talking on the phone like we normally do.
Oh, it's absolutely gorgeous. Beautiful.
It's fun. And, you know, earlier we had to close the windows because they had one of them blowers going on. And now that the blowing is over, we can open the window. It's even better. All right. So last night, look, they said on Monday it sold out. I'm like, yeah, right, yeah. But when I got there last night, that's what sold out looks like. I mean, it was overflowing. In the outfield and the infield, what were you thinking in pregame in terms of how your team would react? Because it's been a while since it was that overflowing at Lamps.
Yeah, you know, it was like the LSU game of 2020. That was like that. And then the other side was when I was coaching at A&M in a regional final. That was exactly the environment that I remembered as a guest, an opponent.
Yes.
A view of that. And we lost 9-8 in extra innings. So it was really remarkable. And it was similar Florida my first year because I hadn't been on the home side of it. And I think there was 2,700. We had 3,100 people when we played LSU. Now I think because of fire marshal, we can't get that many in the stadium anymore. So we got a little bit smaller number just because of they don't want the walking space. The standing room only crowd can't be as big. But my first year, the second weekend we played Florida, and they were ranked number two. And we lost the first two games and won the third game. And those crowds were really good. And that was a very special environment last night. Like, it's why you recruit. And, you know, I was telling them before the game, like, be sure Matt gets lots of video I can use for recruiting. Because it was really a great Louisiana night for Louisiana softball.
Where you never know how your kids are going to react to that, and they reacted tremendously to it.
Really good. You know, I think the impact that Maya Davis had, you know, we're down 2-0. We'd had issues with the sound, with the communication system relaying the signals in, and, you know, the first inning started out so good with a great play, and then two outs, and then all of a sudden we're down 2-0. We lost a review. The out became a foul ball. So many things went wrong in that first two innings. We're down 2-0. And so even me as a coach is like, my mind's like, why can we not show up and play at a big game in the first inning, you know? And Maya slides into third and does this little pulse thing. It changed the whole game. Like, I was like, one moment, like, for me as a coach, and I looked at her and she did that pose, and I'm like, huh, we're only 2-0. She's going to score. There's no outs. There's no way Maya Davis didn't score, and it's 2-1. We're in a great spot here. And it was just the effect of the way she did that with so much swagger that for me as a coach, I felt completely different, and I could hear the difference in our dugout from that moment on. It was really a spectacular moment for Maya to be a leader in our program. And then from then on, it was a Raging Cajun night.
I got to tell you, Coach, I was a little – I don't know that I would have sent her on the ground ball to second on the next batter because that was a – I mean, she was saved, but it was close.
Yeah, well, I believe in sending runners from third to home as a because of momentum and pressure. And we were down 2-0, so that and we didn't have to. You know, we didn't have to, but that was a game changer play when they went after her at home.
Yes.
You know, and instead they could have took the easy out and went to first. Instead they went to home. And that's exactly why you do it. You create pressure. That pressure created a mistake on their end when they didn't get her out. If you're going to go home, you got to get the out at home, or else you got to take the out at first. So it was maybe a gutsy play, but we did it, and it worked, and so we'll take it.
Because, look, if they throw to first, you probably only get one or two runs in that inning instead of six.
The momentum's
yeah,
over.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt.
And so, yeah, it makes a big deal. Okay, one other play like that I want to ask you about. Later in the game, which I was fine with, and I don't know if it was planned or it just worked out that way, Kayla gets on. You hit a ground ball to the pitcher, to the first baseman. They tag the runner, and so she's on second. Maddie comes up and hits a hard single to right. And Maddie went to second, and because she got thrown out at second and allowed you to get the insurance run, was that all part of the plan or just kind of worked out that way?
No, I didn't want that. Yeah, Hunter sent her, I believe. Hunter sent her, but he didn't realize he probably didn't realize I was holding Kayla early. Like, there was no way I was sending Kayla home. She wasn't going to make it.
Because she hit it so hard.
The ball was hit way too hard.
Yeah.
Once I held her, I wish that he would have held Maddie at first. And I haven't even had a chance to talk to Hunter, so I'm talking on the radio before I even get a chance to talk to Coach. But my aspect, I would have rather just held it because down 9-8, it was 8-2 at that point. We got a chance to walk off. Maddie's the walk-off run.
Right.
There's no way they throw her out at second. We could steal second. The only reason they would have possibly thrown, attempted to throw her out was realizing that she's the walk-off run, and we could have took home on that play.
Right.
I would have rather waited.
But I was okay with getting an insurance run.
Yeah,
right
and yeah. Give credit. That's where Kayla Fulton made a tremendous base run. And when the catcher threw to second, I didn't even have time to say go home. When I hollered, when I said go, she's already a step and a half gone. She read it so well, and that's what Kayla Fulton does. She's an extremely intelligent player, and I give her credit. And that run was big. Like, you want to walk off, right?
Yeah.
But, like, that's really greedy. And it was really important to keep that run and get the two home runs give us momentum. And
when you're up
more.
Like that, all insurance runs are good.
Yeah.
No question. And you mentioned Kayla. On my way home, I called someone, and I like, you know, one of the cool things about last night that no one's going to think about is Kayla Fulton was on base 3 times.
Yeah.
In the 9 hole.
She's a winner. That's all you can say about Kayla Fulton is, like, I just said this to my coaches this morning. If you have I don't have a son, but if you have a son, you want him to marry someone like Kayla Fulton, and that to me, that's like the highest compliment you can give a young lady. She's just such a classy person, individual, and extremely intelligent. And I think it's a reflection of her parents. Her parents are extremely classy, and they're team people. Like they're about the team and about the program. It's not about individual results of a ball game. So when Kayla gets a chance to play, we're just better when she's out there. And she didn't even have to play well. Like last night she played so well, and that magnifies it. But if she's in the lineup, she was in the lineup both games Saturday, and we have 14 hits each game. She didn't get 14 hits, but our team did. And so that's when we were talking about the lineup yesterday. I said, hey, you know, we win when Kayla's in. We're putting Kayla in. And so –
yeah, it's just fun. When after doing my post game interviews, I was walking out and she was still at the gate, and she had all these kids around her signing autographs. And I said, "Look at Kayla Fulton, superstar!" And she just smiled. Yeah, it was just that was really cool. All right, so I thought one of the big things about last night was your pitching approach kind of changed. I mean, a lot more balls hit to left field, throwing outside in Baton Rouge last week. We saw multiple jam shot pop-outs to the pitcher, which you don't see a whole lot in softball. I mean, obviously the pitching approach changed and it worked.
Yeah, I changed the strategy a little bit. After I got done with LSU, I wanted to go more up and in and follow it. So we and Coach Justin, who's really sharp on pitching, obviously, and he has made that comment about off speed, change up, follow off speed with a change up, and then go back hard up and in, or hard in, and it creates a jam. And dead on, it's really, that's really good knowledge, and he shared that with me, and so we did it once, and it worked. I was like, see if that works again. We were here twice, and it worked, and then we did work several times. And I think that's one of the things Justin brings to our program, a lot of intelligence, a lot of a knowledge that he's learned through his family and his father, and just what a tremendous young man, and really helps us in a lot of ways. But that was a specific example of where he helped us last night.
I've heard you use this term, but I don't think you really believe it because I've seen your schedules. It's a trap game today.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be if we allow it to be. And they've won, 15 in a row? So
they're a good team.
We overlook a team that won 15 in a row. I think it's a challenge game. Like, it challenges us to come out again two nights in a row and play at a high level. That's what we got to do in the regional. It challenges us to go on the road against a good team that we've already beat at home. That's good. It's a midweek that we got to go on the road. There's all kinds of ways that you can look at it that challenges your team to be to rise up. And so that's where we got to look at it. If we didn't look at it those ways, then it could become a trap game because we got nothing to win, nothing, everything to lose. That's not true. We got a lot to win. We've got ourselves in position to host a regional. This game could be like, you know, the cake's made, and we got the icing on it. Now we got to light the candle. And that's how I'm looking at it.
And they got about I think their RPI last time I look is like 41, 42, right? Yeah. In that range. So, I mean, you know, it's not like it's not a good win if you get it.
It's a top 50 win if we get it. And, you know,
on the road.
I was reading this morning, and it said if you I was reading forum, and you know, it's like if UL loses, it's a top 50 loss. It doesn't hurt them. The win last night gets them a regional. A loss today wouldn't hurt them. In this writer's opinion, that doesn't mean it's fact. It's all subjective.
Yeah.
But I'm not looking that way. I'm looking at, we got to win out the rest of the season. We worked our tails off. We won 25 out of the last 28 games after a 9-12 start. We're not going to let up. We're gonna go. And we're trying to get better position for postseason. We're going to start Sam Ryan tonight, most likely, and we're gonna try to, you know, get our roster and our bullpen, our everybody in the team involved here down the stretch, so that we're ready to go into the postseason full force.
All right, Coach. Well, did you sleep as good as you thought you would last night?
I did. I slept really good, and I woke up at 3 o'clock and thought it was 6 o'clock, and then I woke up at 5 o'clock, and I said, well, I'm not waiting till daylight. I went out, I ran my beagles, I ran my dogs for about an hour and a half, and then I was at the office at 7. So it was just a great win, and one of those times as a coach where you feel really good about what you're doing as a team and as a staff. I feel really good about my staff. I feel really good about my team, and it's just fun when it's like that.
Congratulations. Good luck this afternoon or tonight in Lake Charles. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, your home for the best local sports talk in Southwest Louisiana.
Welcome back. Again, you are listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette, 1041 Lake Charles, and we've had a great show out here at Teague Moore Field at Russo Park. Again, talk with UL baseball coach Matt Deggs at the beginning of the 9 o'clock hour. Got a phone interview with our friend Jake DeLome, and former Cajun quarterback, and who's just, like me, just itching to see what's going to happen in the NFL draft. And then got to talk to athletic director Brian Maggard. Like a lot of us, including Coach Glasgow, just kind of still buzzing from that great game last night where the Cajuns were able to beat LSU 9-4. And again, I understand there's the UL-LSU part of it. I get that's always part of it when the Cajuns play the Tigers. But last night was not really about UL versus LSU. It was about getting that really another signature win that you needed to have going into, when the selection committee actually meets. And I said we were going to kind of not talk about it really for another 2 or 3 weeks, and we probably aren't. But Coach Glasgow, when we were talking right before we went on, kind of mentioned it. Like, it's not just about hosting – you don't want to be hosting as a 15 or 16 seed. And I don't even really like being a 14 seed as a host. But there seems to be a little bit of a depends where the line is drawn. And obviously what I mean by that is if you host as a 15, 16 seed, let's say, almost every, in all likelihood, if you win that regional, which you're not guaranteed to do, but if you happen to win that regional, then you're either going to Austin or you're going to Norman. Now, Cajuns have already played in Austin many times. They're not that, it won't be culture shock, but still they're really good. Cajuns just played in Norman this year, so it won't be culture shock, but they're still really good. That's not where you want to go. And so, you know, who's going to be three or four? You know, you got an eight, you know, Duke, you got whoever wins the SEC. You know, some people might, you know, Tennessee would win the conference tournament. Maybe them, we'll see. You know, LSU's got a three RPI, Georgia's RPI, I don't know, five or six, something like that. I don't know that they're going to really be, like, if I had to guess right now, I would guess LSU would probably be 7, 8, 9, somewhere in there. I don't think, even though their RPI is that high, unless they would like maybe win the conference tournament, then they could. But they've lost three straight SEC series in a row. And so I think they would have to go really far, win the conference tournament, to really be a three or a four national seed. I would think they would be more in the 7, 8, 9 range, but we'll see. But so you need to keep winning is the point. You don't want to be a 15 or 16 seed. If you can get to be, if you could just get up to 13, you feel like if you play well, not saying you can't beat Oklahoma, they've already done it. But I think if you, because you've beaten Oklahoma, I'm not for going back to Norman. You know, one of the things that you know them, but they know you. Like, you've played Texas a lot in recent years, you know, and so Texas knows you pretty well. And I don't know that you really want to play a team of that caliber late in the year that knows that much about you. I would think it would be best for Cajuns to play, you know, one of those other teams at 3, 4, 5. Of course, all of this is, we're getting way ahead of ourselves. But again, it's something that people are talking about because you got the big win last night over a number three RPI team in LSU. So we'll see what happens. Again, this weekend is going to be tremendous. The Cajuns out here, Southern Miss at home, 2014. If you didn't get a chance, to hear Coach Deggs when we talked to him at the very end of that interview, you could just tell how special the 2014 team is for him. And it is, it's special for a lot of people. It was a lot of fun. And it was a great, and it's just, it's a shame they didn't get that one more win. But that certainly didn't tarnish all the memories and how special it was to be a national seed and be ranked number one in the country late in the season. It was certainly lots and lots of fun. And so, again, the other guys will be coming in. And it should be a great weekend. We look forward to it. All right, that'll do it. Y'all have a nice day.